Best damn podcast, the best damn town. You wanna get up, get ready to get down. Well, it's Big White Sky and the Wild River Tank. If you wanna go, we can take you there. To Great Falls,
Montana.
Welcome to the greatest damn town in Montana, Great Falls. I'm Rebecca Ingham.
I'm Shannon Newth.
And we're no damn experts. I almost want to say I'm an expert on this next topic, but I'm not at all. There are portions of
I think you're an expert observer
I am.
Of this topic.
And I couldn't be more excited about the topic we're going to be discussing today. So, Shannon, what do we have in store?
Yes, I am very excited to welcome family friend of mine, a fantastic author, photographer, history buff, all of the things, Paul Snyder. Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, and thank you for letting me be here.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not sure you'll thank us at the end of this conversation, right, but hopefully you will.
Glad we got that out at the beginning, yeah, because Paul is the author of Make Mine a Ditch, which I love because whiskey ditch is a prominent drink in most small towns growing up. It is the first mixed drink I learned how to make when I was bartending at the Loring Bar. So it's pretty solid ability there.
Oh, you piqued his interest.
Yeah. Well, I read the bio.
Yeah. Hey, good job.
I don't even have to explain to Paul where that is.
Yeah.
I know.
He knew
well.
It. He knew it. He got excited about that.
Doesn't have much of a back bar, but it's a beautiful little bar with history of its own.
Yes.
So Paul's going to talk to us about his book and all the other things that he feels he wants to share on this podcast today. So I'm super excited about it.
And Paul, so we're going to be talking about all these historic back bars that you took a statewide tour. We'll focus in on the ones in Great Falls. But first, for those who don't know, the title, Make Mine a Ditch, what's a ditch?
Well, back in the early days when cattle drives were coming from Texas up to Montana, and back in that period of time, and it wasn't just here, it was all over, but the story is that, especially the Montana story is that when these guys came into Montana, they either brought their own whiskey or had it made locally around their campfire or wherever. And the only thing they had to mix it with was water. Well, water was short supply in this country, especially in the summertime. But the only water they had was ditch water. So that's where it, and there are other variations of, you might talk to somebody else that has a different version of it, but that's the only one I've heard in Montana, so it's really a Montana name. And you can't go into a bar and order a ditch without sometimes finding somebody that doesn't know what a ditch is. Oh, they look at you kind of strange. Well, what's a ditch?
Yeah.
You're not from Montana, are you?
you're new here, aren't you?
I was just having a conversation with my husband and I were at a wedding reception for a guy who's involved with Montana grain growers. So there were a lot of farmers and producers here. And I was just talking with someone whose go-to drink was a ditch, a whiskey ditch, and how he's said that to people before, and he goes out to Washington, D.C., you know, to advocate for Montana, things like that. And he was like, the looks that he gets sometimes, like people don't know what a ditch is. Even in town somewhere, sometimes at some of the bars, there's people who don't know.
You know, that's kind of become a game with me.
Yeah?
I'll look at somebody that's waiting on me, and I don't know. She doesn't look like she's from Montana.
Yeah.
And I'll order a ditch. I'll just order a ditch just to be ornery.
Yeah. How often do they know what it is?
Well, it's
when you play the game.
It's really not too often.
Yeah.
It does happen, but it's not too often.
Okay. So that can be a game for you visitors when you come see us here. You can play Paul's game and test
them. See if we know.
Yeah. It's also amazing to me, just going back to ditch water, did they just bet on like the alcohol would kill all of the germs from the, like, why just drink it straight at that point?
If you knew what the whiskey was that they drank.
At that not time. Quality whiskey.
The ditch water was mild.
Yeah, I'm guessing quality distilling operations
And they'd take raw liquor, raw alcohol, and mix a bunch of other stuff in it. You wouldn't really want to know what it was. Sometimes it was gunpowder. Sometimes it was snakeheads and just
all
kinds of stuff. Yeah,
give you lead poisoning.
And they'd put other stuff in there to color it. And it was really strange.
Yeah.
So your book is all about back bars in Montana, which I love, just going to bars in Montana. It's a real fun pastime. How did you decide, I'm just gonna go to bars and see what the back of them look like?
Well, this whole thing, I think, started when I was a kid, and I didn't know it. Okay. I didn't realize it.
Not in a nefarious way, just pure curiosity.
Well, as I said in the book there, the first bar that I ever laid eyes on in that way was when I stuck my head, I don't know, I was maybe a freshman in high school, or I don't remember when exactly, stuck my head into a smokehouse bar, the smokehouse bar in Malta, and there was this huge, the first thing I saw when I looked in there was this huge, big, ornate, black colored back bar, and that kind of stuck in my mind. When I've seen those things all around, you know, they're not just in Montana, they're all over, but they're easier to find in Montana because we are such a small populous state, and they're spread out, whereas these other places are hidden in the corner in these big cities and except in southeastern Alaska. They have a lot of them up there. But that's how it kind of got started. And
well, it is really unique in the fact that you go into some of the, I'm going to call them podunkiest bars that you can find.
Yeah.
And they've got these beautiful, ornate, wooden back bars that you go, propped up a shack around this masterpiece, and that's pretty commonplace to see in Montana.
Yes, but you know, the sad part of it is these people don't realize what they have.
Oh.
I can give you examples of places I've gone into, and here's one of the early Brunswick back bars. And the thing is so covered with garbage covered up with bottles and things that you can't see it. When if they were to clear that out and leave it there as an attraction, it would be a whole lot more beneficial to them, I believe. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure, but that's my feeling on it.
I just have to imagine, you know, back in the day, like the 1800s, you get a catalog like you would the Sears catalog just to order all these different back bars, because it seems like there was a lot from the same company. I didn't read the book from cover to cover, but I browsed through and a lot of the same names pop up. And so would they just ship out catalogs and people are like, oh, yeah. I mean, it seems like an odd.
I went to Brunswick. Yeah,
it seems like just an odd, I don't know. Well, thing that you would manufacture?
Brunswick is an unusual company in the fact that they came over here. He came over here from Switzerland, I believe it was, and in 1845, and settled in the Illinois area.
Okay.
And they were big into building furniture, carriages, things like that. That's what they started out as. And then he got interested in billiards, so they started building billiard tables. And one thing led to another, and there was another company that started playing with these back bars. And from that, through the mergers, Brunswick, Calder, and Balky got together. They produced the majority of these bars, but subsequently, there were other companies, the Phoenix Manufacturing Company, there were several others. And you'll find some of those in the book, too, of the different companies. But some of them were scattered elsewhere. There was several in the Minnesota Midwest area because of the availability of lumber and timber they could work with. But there were some down in the southeast. And these companies also had branches in the southern parts of the state, of the nation. Huh. And so Brunswick, though, was the prominent one. And they kept on going. And some of these, you know, there's one there in the book, one down at Mitland and Dillon. It's beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. It wasn't built by Brunswick. And so some of these other companies did some real nice work. But Brunswick was predominant.
Do you know how they found them? Like, I mean, you're in Ingomar, Montana, and you're like, I want a back bar that's very pretty. I mean, because it can just be a slab of wood with some stuff.
You know, you got a good point there. How did they know? How did they sail up here? Some of the original ones, very early ones, and very few, I would have to say, came up on the boat to Fort Benton. Well, how did those people up here know to order one? Or, I guess there was probably more conversation going on between Montana and these other areas than we really realize. But it was slow going because it took a long time for mail to get from here by boat down to St. Louis. So that's a good question as to how they knew.
Well, and why you would, I have to assume, make that kind of an investment in your little shed bar.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about an investment in today's thinking. You could buy one of those bars for $100.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Yeah.
Well, I know that's a lot of money back then, but these are huge, ornate pieces.
I have a copy of the, and which are very rare, of the catalog from Brunswick from 1905, I believe it was.
Oh, my gosh.
And that you'd be surprised. Cool. You'd be surprised at the cost of those things and what you could get for.
Well,
that goes into a whole more.
Right.
Go ahead.
We could go very deep in that.
Yes.
But there's not really, like, they're not necessarily mass produced, or were they?
They were.
Oh.
Then why are there not more duplicates? Like, this is the same.
They don't all look the same. Yeah.
No, they don't all look the same. But there are similarities. There is a very good similarity between one of the largest Brunswicks, which one we have here in Great Falls, the Club Cigar, that bar. Mm-hmm. But there's another one that looks very similar to it. But it's very different in this also, and that is in the Butte
Head Frame Spirits.
Head Frames bar. Have you been there?
Oh, well, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, then you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And there are several things like that that have the one in Dillon is similar to one of the models in Brunswick. Hmm. So they kind of copied each other. There was the basic theme of those bars remained the same. And when they drew off of that theme, they came up with different variations of how to construct them. And this subject has gotten to be much deeper than I ever imagined it to be. I thought, there's these pretty bars and they're all over the state here. Let's collect them. But then the more I got into it, the more deep, and it has continued. The interest in the book has continued, and I keep getting conversation like this about the things that went on in there, and so it's amazing.
Well, let me just back up, because growing up in a bar, I know what a back bar is, but for you listening, you may be a little confused. Mm-hmm. You walk into your local watering hole and it's not very big, and you've got what we'll call the front bar. This is the area where you can walk up, put your foot on a railing and your arm on the bar and go, I'd like a ditch, please.
You're getting served right there. Yeah.
And then the bartender will turn around to the back bar. Mm-hmm. So it's like the little aisle from the front bar to the back bar. And what we're talking about is that back bar where usually they're pulling the beer out of, or the cash register's on, or whatever it is. But
there's
it's often a big mirror. Big mirror and a huge showpiece that just sits on the back wall or a wall in that bar and just stands there in all of its glory, mm-hmm. saying, yeah, I'm a masterpiece that should be dusted, probably.
That has never been, probably, in a lot of these.
And so it's the thing that you're facing most often if you're sitting at the at a bar, mm-hmm. looking at a wall.
Mm-hmm. The front bar,
yes,
is another part of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. In the original bars, when you could buy these, you could, for instance, let's take the Montana bar in Miles City.
Okay.
That bar is the most complete one that I've seen in Montana in relation to the Brunswick production, because Brunswick not only made the back bar, they made a matching front bar, and these other companies made matching front bars too. And they made all the other utensils. They made the ice boxes that they used to have back then. Mm-hmm. And they made the booths and the dividers. That bar in Miles City, the Montana bar, is complete. And it is
all matching.
A good representation of what Brunswick produced. But these other bars, they all made a matching front bar. It was the same style and everything of the back bar.
Are the front bars a little harder to find because of the abuse they would have endured by the patrons?
Not so much that, as Prohibition had a big deal on that. That's another subject.
Mm-hmm. Dark day when we weren't allowed to drink in public.
Yeah,
but that was, and we can get more into that, but that's where a lot of these disappeared to, right?
Prohibition came along in 1919, and there's a big history before that for getting to that point. But so between 19 and 1933 was the period of Prohibition. And when Prohibition started, it started with the stroke of a pen, and it wiped out a whole industry.
Yeah.
And it affected the agricultural people up in Montana, mm-hmm. here. but during that time, when they did that, all these bars had to go someplace. So they'd take them apart, put them in the basement, put them in the garage, put them in the barn, and they got stored. And then I put it in there as that's when, during this period of time, is when these bars grew legs. Because at the end of Prohibition, they came out, people were buying them. Oh, okay, well, we're going to use them in a bar again. And they did. But when they did that, these front bars often got separated. Either they'd never get saved, or they got separated from the original, because these people would sell these things in piecemeal. And that's still going on.
Hmm.
So consequently, the front and the back bars got separated in that way.
Well, during Prohibition, the front bar could still be used as a counter where the back bar necessarily wouldn't be able to. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there are good examples of that in the book, too, about how there's two or three examples. Well, anyway. Yes. They were repurposed in grocery stores, or these bars, the whole bar itself would turn into a cigar store.
Oh, okay. That was still legal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was still legal. Smoke,
that's a good repurpose of it.
So, yes, they stayed alive in some ways, but they were very well disguised.
Mm. go ahead.
Did they come, so going back to when they were shipped here or brought here, were they in pieces? You talked about when they kind of tore them down, they were in pieces. Or did they get shipped and moved as these ginormous things?
They came in sections.
Okay.
They came in sections. And you can see that in every one of these things. You'll notice in the center of the bigger ones, you'll notice what I call a keystone up there. And that is the dividing point of that top bar. And then the pillars or columns were separate, and so were the front bar or the lower shelf bar part of it. I'm not quite sure. I think some of those were divided also because some of them were immense.
And the mirrors probably later.
Yeah, the mirrors were all separated.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I wonder why they added mirrors.
Yeah.
It just seems like an odd... I think of that every time I'm sitting at a bar and there's
looking
a mirror
at yourself.
And I'm looking at myself and I'm like,
I don't need to see this.
Why are there mirrors?
Yeah. Well, because there's a lot of more space you could have used for storage or intricacies.
Well, that and I know, the whole design element makes the room look bigger, but it's like an odd thing.
It is, I suppose. But I look at it as a reflection of our culture.
Yep.
Even then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a really good
because
point.
You can look in there and you see how they looked then, and you can look in there and how you look now.
Watch your progression.
Uh-huh. It's tries to sober you up a little bit.
So the first time I was introduced to back bars as kind of a point of, I don't know, history or uniqueness was I was at a board meeting in Haver. Mm. And as part of the board meeting in Haver, one of our stops after the board meeting was the Palace Bar.
The Palace Bar. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I'm happy to go to the Palace Bar at any time.
Did you know that the fellow that owns the Palace Bar is from Malta?
I didn't know that.
Well, there you go.
There we go. But the Palace Bar back bar has some big significance, and I'm going to screw it up, but I think if I remember, it's the oldest back bar in the state of Montana.
This business of the oldest back bar in Montana is
bunch of malarkey.
No, it's not a malarkey. It's another selling point. Like all the bars came up on the boat. Well, no, they didn't.
Yeah.
And the railroad. Anyway, that's another subject. The back bar in Haver and the Club Cigar Bar here are the same model with one slight difference.
Oh.
The back bar here in Great Falls, the Club Cigar, the columns on the end go all the way to the floor. The one in Haver, they go and sit on top of the counter.
Oh, okay.
That is the only difference between those two bars that I could find.
Huh.
Yeah.
But those are early, very early bars, but they are not the oldest. Talking about the oldest one. The oldest one... There's contention here. There is a bar in Roy.
Roy, Montana.
Roy, Montana.
Yep, right outside of Lewistown.
I'm talking about something outside
Great
Falls.
That's fine. We can acknowledge there's no hotels in Roy. It's good.
The Roy bar, you look at it, it looks very rudimentary. And it very well be something that was built some other time by somebody else, but it's got a Brunswick name on it.
Oh, huh.
And the Red Brunswick name label is just Brunswick, which was what first came out. The question exists, and that bar supposedly came out of Maiden, I believe.
Ghost Town Maiden.
Yeah.
Still outside of Lewistown.
Mining town.
Yep.
Huh.
So that bar. Now, there's another bar that I am more thinking is probably one of the earliest ones. or the earliest, who knows? I don't think anybody knows. And it no longer exists. It's in Cleveland, and that's in there too.
Cleveland, Montana.
Cleveland, Montana, south of Chinook. That bar could very well have come up on the boat and been offloaded down along the river there.
Wow.
At Cow's Landing, I think it is, or something like that. It's one of the places where the boat stopped.
They just dumped it off, and someone showed up and got it.
And it's not that far up to Cleveland from there.
Right.
So that one, it wasn't that big a bar. It was a little simpler, but it was an early, very early design. So I'm more in believing that that one is probably one of the oldest ones.
Huh, that makes sense.
It's hard to tell. Mm-hmm. The bars really started coming in here with, let me back up a little bit, with the boats from 1830 to 1890, was 1860 to 1890, 30 years, is when the boats came up to Fort Benton. Well, during that time, there wasn't much up here. Mm-hmm. You know, you had a few mining towns, you had some places, but there wasn't enough concentration of population, in my opinion, to warrant somebody ordering a bar.
Right.
Right.
So it was after 1881, the first railroad came into Three Mile City. Mm-hmm. And from then on, the railroad from in 1880s, the Great Northern came up. The first one was Northern Pacific, and then Milwaukee in the middle. And that didn't come until 1905 or 15 or something like that.
Okay.
So that's when these bars really started, and that's when the population came in. Mm-hmm. The Homesteading Act, the railroads played on that. And when the Homesteading Act allowed all this land to be opened up, they were promoting the influx of people into the area. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other story. But that is the reason that these other bars started coming up on railroads, I believe.
So I have to ask, did you just start going into every bar in the state of Montana and and researching their back bars, or did someone go,
"No,
hey, Paul, this back bar is pretty cool. You should come look at it."
No, back, right after I retired from flying, we traveled around the state a lot in a trailer and just traveling.
Yeah.
And that's when I started taking pictures of these things, and the photographic equipment I had. I got to the point where if I couldn't do it with existing light, I was taking lights along and trying to see what I could capture. Well, it worked, but it was a pain. And then we did that for a long time, and I collected a lot of information from these bars then. Then after my wife died, I had all these things, and I'd been looking at this thing, what can I do with it? So I said, I need a project, something to get into. So I like to travel. I like to drive. I love the state.
Yeah.
Well, let's see if I can't put together a compilation of all of this. So I did that. And that's when I started really digging up the information on all the ones that I had, plus the ones that most of them, which I acquired in the travels around the state. With that in mind. So that's how I really got to going on this.
Is there a volume 2? Have you discovered more that you wanted to cover since then?
Oh, yes, I have. Mm-hmm. There are not too many more that I missed. I missed one up in Scobie.
Oh.
There's a beautiful one up there I know about. There was one in Ashland. Mm-hmm. And that burned.
Oh.
There was one in Butte, and that burned.
Wow.
The one, I was going to redo that one in Cleveland, and that I got to looking for that. It disappeared. The building's gone. Everything. I don't know what happened to the bar. I still wanted to chase that down.
Yeah.
But there are a few, but not too many more that I'm really aware of that we can do. There was only estimated to be about 55 bars like this in the state. Mm-hmm. Well, I found 31. There was one that people from Malta kept asking me, well, what about the one out at Zortman?
Mm.
You know, and talking about looking for these old bars. And I started digging into that, and I found out that it went from Zortman to the people there sold it and started sold the bar, but they kept the back bar. And started a museum up by Grass Range someplace up in that area.
Huh.
And that eventually 4 or 5 years later failed. And the bar was sold to a fellow that came up here in the summertime.
Okay.
And it was sold to him. He took the thing down to Florida.
Oh.
And it never got on. He was going to put it in his house.
Hmm.
It never got unpacked.
Oh.
And it sat there. And finally, after how many years, who knows, the bar was, they moved back to Montana. He bought a place back up down by Three Forks. And the bar was moved back up there with the same intent. Huh. And it sat in the garage.
Oh, my gosh.
They passed away, I guess, but his son got the bar.
Okay.
And here, 2 years ago, maybe about that, I found out that the son had this bar, and he was trying to sell it. And he had restored it. He didn't have the front bar. He just had the back bar. I got a hold of him, and that was the bar that came out of
Zortman.
Wow. So do you have this bar now?
No.
Okay.
Do you have pictures of it?
I have pictures. No, they're not in the book, though.
You don't have a desire to just start accumulating all these back bars? I think it would be cool.
Yeah, no kidding.
But you'd be surprised. If you went online looking for antique bars, you'll find them.
There's plenty of them out there.
Wow. Yeah, but it's not all in this country.
Mm.
But the people come up here and they buy them.
Yeah.
Oh, that bar, I meant to say, that bar at Three Forks, the son had, he sold it finally.
Oh.
And it's in Oklahoma at a rancher's house.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'm going to tell you flat out, mm-hmm. if I didn't live in the house I lived in, I would create my own bar area,
yeah,
with one of these back bars.
I was just thinking, I was like, is there, I need like a mini
you
version
might be able
of this.
To do. I think your place is a little bigger than mine, just my assumption. So if you could find a way to make that happen at your house.
Yeah, there's not open walls. There's windows. But I have a small area we're trying to figure out what to do with. So
surprisingly, I got a phone call one day from a fellow, and he said, because I had somehow, I had written a book. He got the book, and I had written in there, have a ditch with me.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy called me. He said, well, you said to have a ditch with you. Why don't you come on out to my place?
Ooh.
So I went out there, and here is this huge back bar.
Oh.
I can't remember exactly where he said he got it, but it is a large version of the bar that came out of a brothel in Miles City.
Oh, a brothel bar.
Yeah, but this one is huge.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful bar.
Yeah.
But you're talking about having it in your house. You have to have a big house.
Yeah, you got to build around it.
These are huge.
Here, I own this. Build the house around this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's
really.
It's not really a just drop-in kind of thing.
And for me, I'm going to want the matching front bar.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the way I roll. Yeah.
That's a realistic way of getting out of having one.
Right. That's true. Yeah. If it's a requirement to have the front, then you're probably not going to have one. Yeah.
So do companies like this still exist? Like the back bar back manufacturers? Bar
you know, the back bars were built from 1878 to 1912. And then they were getting scared of prohibition. Things were on the, and Brunswick backed out of it in 1912. And some of these other companies followed not too long after, but they just kind of faded away from. You're not going to find one, I don't believe, that's commercially built now. Hmm. You could find them, you can find them custom built.
Get the good wood guys to start making some back bars.
There was a fellow in Whitefish when I lived over there. That was an area that was a lot of outsiders were coming in and buying their second place. And this fellow came in and he found there was a bar in Kalispell that's in here that he wanted duplicated. So he found a cabinet maker there. And I went over to this guy's shop while he was making it, and he was doing a beautiful job. This fellow is from the east, I don't know exactly where, but on the toward the east coast. And he sent over loads of walnut.
Oh,
and
wow.
This bar was built out of walnut.
Whew.
And I've forgotten how much it cost him a bundle.
Mm. Walnut is just a generally pricier wood.
Right. And that's just the wood, not even doing anything with it or shipping it or anything. Yeah.
Huh.
So he paid a bundle for that, but I don't think it bothered him a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people over in that part of the state just have pockets that are deep full of cash.
Another one, talking along this line. The mint bar down in Whitehall burned, the original, and it had an original bar in it. The person that owned that had another bar built.
Just like it?
I don't know if it was exactly like it, but I think it was. But it was obvious. I didn't even include it in here because of the fact that this was not original at all. And it looked out of place.
Yeah. So we've talked about, now I'm blanking, Club Cigar.
Mm-hmm.
Great Falls has three bars featured.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In your book?
Yes.
So Club Cigar.
Club Cigar, the City Bar.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mint, the old Mint Bar.
Oh, which is now
inside the C.M. Russell Museum. Yes. Yeah. But that's the one, Charlie. Yeah. Good old Charlie Russell would drink at, which is why it's in the museum now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually owned by the Montana State Historical Society.
Okay.
And Brad has been on the podcast talking about his bar.
From City Bar. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is a beautiful bar.
That bar has a sister bar in Moore, Montana.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. The office.
Been there too?
Oh, of course. It'd be a shorter list of the places
you have not
drink
been.
At.
Okay, fair enough. The so Charlie's, we'll call it Charlie's Bar, is in the C.M. Russell Museum. You can go. What was, you know, that one was a little different, I imagine, than really any others in your book, because you're not photographing it, you're not seeing it in its original location.
Setting. No, there is a picture in the book about.
I really like
in
that
the
picture.
Original, in this original location.
Which, do you remember where that original location was?
I was in that bar one time, but I was in high school, I think. And I went in there. And that I always thought it was on the opposite side of the street from where it originally was. Mm. But I cannot pinpoint exactly.
It just doesn't look like a typical like Western bar. It looked like a clean kind of. Mm-hmm.
It was yes.
Modern, fresh
right.
bar in the
yeah.
picture.
Yes, it did. It was.
Like where the girls would go to get their cocktails, not where the dirty cowboys
yeah,
would have.
It looks. It has different
very
detailing
much,
yeah. or lack thereof than the others do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what I was drawn into that original picture of the Mint Bar. Mm-hmm. So, Paul, do you have a favorite back bar?
You know, that is a question I'm constantly being asked.
Of course.
And if I want to say a favorite, it is, you know, there are three ways to talk about a bar. There's a bar that's on the corner of the avenue there. There's a front bar, and there's a back bar.
Yeah.
But as far as all three of those, I think the Montana bar in Mile City. Mm. As far as the bar, back bar and the front bar, I think the one in the Dillon, Metland Hotel, which I'm not even sure exists anymore. The Metland Hotel has been up and down, and they've been trying to keep it as a historic place.
Yeah, I haven't been down there since the 90s.
Yeah, so that, I don't know. Last I heard, it was not being used. So what happened to the bar, I don't know. I haven't been down there either. And I know of 2 years ago, I was down through Dillon, and I stopped by there, and it was closed up. Mm.
Well, I mean, it's real interesting to me because of the quality of craftsmanship these back bars have been. You know, why am I blanking on the name? Just north of Glacier National Park in Cardston, Alberta, they have the Remington Carriage Museum.
Yes.
And so it's just a bunch of carriages, which is really cool. I think a museum of back bars eventually would just be fun to experience. Yeah. Because then you get to see them all in one location, except the sucky part is you'd have to pull them out of the bars they're in, which is really just a unique experience when you walk in and you're like, holy crap.
But those bars consume a little more area, too, than a wagon.
is true.
The interesting part of it is that these, especially with the Brunswick case, these companies that were building these, we're also into building wagons and carriages. They were into that as well back in the early days.
I think one of the neatest things, I noticed you did Peps in Big Sandy. That back bar is one I can stare at a lot because it is just, you don't expect it. And I think that's kind of the case in a lot of these places. You walk in and and it's a tin-sided building, and you walk in, and there's just this beautiful, and it's huge. It is huge.
That's at the Peps bar.
Oh, cover photo of his book is at Peps.
With your ditch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got good pizza there, if you can ever get pizza. But
there you go.
That is fun.
It's kind of interesting about Big Sandy. They have three bars there of these.
Three back bars?
Three of these back bars, yeah.
All in this one bar?
No.
In town.
Just in Big Sandy alone. Oh, wow.
Yeah, small town.
Right.
Yeah. Got enough bars.
But still, yeah.
Each person claims their own.
It's true. That's how it goes.
I'm sidelining from getting from that's Great fine. Falls.
Yeah, to that's fine.
The Peps bar started out. It didn't come there originally. It wound up coming down there by wagon from Harlem. It was actually in Harlem first.
Huh.
And then got hauled down there. It's got a thing, that one's got a very interesting history to it, too, in the way that it got there and the trials and tribulations they went with prohibition and the being a speakeasy type operation and everything. So it was, yeah.
Have you been to the speakeasy in Butte?
No.
The one they uncovered down in the basement of some building?
Oh, I haven't.
Yeah.
Is this recent?
I would say within the last 10 years.
Oh.
They found it.
Wow.
Like it had been covered up.
Wow.
So, yeah. But that's another town. I don't have a whole bunch of details, obviously.
But interesting. Yeah. But I know that in Great Falls, too, and I think even off of Club Cigar is one of the places where there were some underground
tunnels or something of some kind where things were being run around during Prohibition in Great Falls. Do you know anything about that?
No, I haven't heard that one. Okay. Because the club cigar itself moved several times. It moved up the street from where it originally started. Then it moved from there into the Great Falls Hotel.
Okay.
And from the Great Falls Hotel, it moved across the alley to where it is now.
Okay.
And the Great Falls Hotel.
And the back
long
bar
since.
Got moved every time with it too.
Well, that the back bar and the front bar did.
Okay.
Yeah, those things just moved around like that.
Yeah.
And there was other things that went on with that bar, like one of the longtime bartenders there was a madam.
Aha.
And she had a couple operations.
Okay.
And she was also, interestingly enough, she was an employment contact for these ranchers that would need some help. They'd go into this gal, and she would know these guys that were coming in, spending time at the bar, and
They would
come in and find out if she knew anybody that needed help, or she would find out that there was a rancher that needed, and that she would. So she was kind of an employment agency
she was
as well,
a matchmaker in lots of ways.
So,
looking for love?
Right.
I got you covered.
Yeah.
Looking for
need
work?
A handyman? Got that all figured out.
So you know, there's all kinds of stories like that. I suppose if a person could get to another problem is getting to some of the original people that knew anything about these bars. These bars rotate, like owners is like they were rotating bars back in after Prohibition. But so it's hard to really come down with finite details on what went on in these bars. Another reason for the mirror, you know, if you could look in that mirror and have it tell you what it saw and what it heard.
Yeah.
Over the years.
The stories all of these bars could tell would be amazing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real one.
Well, the things they've seen.
Endured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. More of the enduring part, especially those front bars. I mean.
Oh.
Yeah.
And there's several of them. There's one in just outside of Plentywood, Antelope, Montana.
Ah.
That there's a picture in there of the bullet that was recovered from the bar.
Oh.
And there were other bullet holes. There's a bullet hole in the roof of one in Red Lodge. In the ceiling, you could see a bullet hole up there. And so, you know, there's a lot of these things. Well, they don't know anything, a story about the...
They just know it's there.
And there's a one hole-in-the-wall bar in Miles City, I believe, has bullet holes in the front bar.
Hmm. Well, they packed pistols back
right.
in the
yeah.
day.
That's
everywhere they went.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me because the Club Cigar here in Great Falls, for example, or even City Bar, maybe even more so than Club Cigar to me, I would not necessarily walk in and expect this big ornate bar in there. So they often take you by surprise, especially when you look at the buildings or, you know, Club Cigar. I mean, I have fun at Club Cigar, but it's not necessarily, it's more of a...
It has a divey bar.
It has
a little age on it.
Yeah, yeah. And so you walk in and you're like, oh, this is unexpectedly nice. You know, you have these huge, beautiful pieces, and it just changes the whole feel of the bar itself.
It's true.
So for the back bars in Great Falls, we'll cover each one of the three. What are the things that people should notice about them? Other than their grandeur and their enormity and their age, what are some of the things, like if you're at the Club Cigar, that you want to point out that people should make special note of when they're looking at it?
The Club Cigar, for instance, the detail that's put into that bar, that's another one of the things about all of these bars. It's a reflection of the way things were constructed way back when, back in 1878 mm-hmm. on up, because all of this was done by hand.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we didn't have, I say all of it was done by hand. There was, well, yes, it was. It wasn't until after 1900 we had any power tools. Mm. And anything that was built out of wood, all your carriages, anything. Mm-hmm. And that's what we had a lot of. Everything you'll notice was back then was out of wood, except in tires of right. Wagons and things. But the people, there were thousands of people that were involved in these construction manufacturing agencies because they were building so much out of wood. The Woodworkers Union, here's an interesting part of it. The Woodworkers Union, there were two of them that I'm familiar with, Amalgamated and Woodworkers of America, I think it was called. They went in 1880, they went on strike. They wanted to go from $1.10 an hour, or a day, it's not an hour, a day, $1.10 a day to $1.60 a day.
Earl?
And they wanted the age limits to be the lowest age a person could work in there was 14.
Oh, well.
And they wanted those eight people to go from 50 cents to, or something like that to something around 60 cents a day or something, 40 to 60. And this is for a 10-hour day they wanted to go to from 12.
Wow.
Six days a week.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, what kind of – you have to have some real desperate people to be working in these – things and getting paid that kind of money.
Yeah.
And there were thousands of them because these factories, there's a picture of one of the factories in there. They're huge. These factories are huge. And they, so that is what you're reflecting to.
Mm.
You're looking at that. You're looking at the kind of work those people had to do. Well, over time, different things changed. The styles of the bars changed because it came easier for them to do it a different way. But there's so much hand detail in those bars.
Hmm.
You look at any of them. Look at the corbels. Look at the trim, you know, and how much. And I'm sure there must have been, they had to have some kind of mechanical means to do some of that, but I don't know exactly how. There's one of the oldest bars that I know of. In Bannock, the front bar that's in here. That's the only bar that's up there in Bannock now, but it is just there and it had been there. You look at that bar, and that's probably the most ornate bar and probably one of the earliest that I have laid eyes on. And you look at that and say, all that handwork that went into building that bar.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
So that is the biggest thing I get out of these things as far as what the attraction is.
Yeah, there's a lot of handwork.
Yeah.
And Bannock that we're talking about is the territorial capital of mm-hmm. our state mm-hmm. and a state park and really an experience worth mm-hmm. having.
Yeah.
I just like going into old buildings that are uninhabited.
Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
people would just open up their fields to me, I'd walk into every building that existed on their place.
And yeah.
Just... I love it, but urban exploration.
Very curious to see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you try, when you went around to do your tour of all of these, did you try ordering a ditch? Like if I go to any of these bars with these back bars featured in here, will they know what a ditch is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Every one of them.
Okay.
They'll know.
They'll know.
So what's the next endeavor? What are you going to dig into next? What's the next book?
I got to figure out how to be about 20 years younger. That's the only thing that's stopping me from trying to do something.
Sure.
Time marches on.
Yeah.
Well, I just think a good compliment to this is the signs, the old bar signs.
Oh, yeah.
The neons, the faded, you know, placards. There's just the signage for some of these bars is really really cool.
Yeah. Mm, it is.
And you enjoy taking your photographs too. You travel all around to do that. So you're that, continuing that, right?
Yeah. That was another thing I started to say, that the equipment when I first started taking these, and then after the digital equipment came out, it made it so much easier. Yeah. I did not have to pack lights around.
Yeah.
And I could take just about every case, existing light was sufficient, even in the darkest.
Yeah. I was gonna say, these bars are not very well lit.
No,
normally.
They're designed to make you look real good. Uh-huh. Yeah. Low lighting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pretty at every hour.
Right. But you also don't get to appreciate a lot of, I was just thinking, for example, like in Club Cigar, I don't know if I appreciate the, like you've said, the grandeur of it, but it's harder to see the detail in the low lighting or really appreciate these bars too.
That's true.
Yeah.
And you don't find too many people that are going to sit and study it. But
right.
Back in the early days, these bars were, the reason they were built in the first place was to give a place a sense of prestige. And they would order these bars to be in competition with the guy down the street.
Yeah. Mm.
And bars were a dime a dozen. Back, you know, you could have a bar wherever you had a place to put a bottle. But so they were using these things as an attraction, and that's where they really caught on as.
Well, and it defines the space. Like you get really a back bar and a front bar, and it doesn't matter what building you're in, you're open for business.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything's right there. Mm-hmm. Makes it easy.
Yeah.
Where can people find your book?
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Well,
it's a good question.
Sad to say, I have two in the car.
So they got to find you.
Yeah. They got to find me. Actually, I might have as many as two more at home.
Whew.
But that's the
so
end
they're,
of it.
They've
that's
all it. Sold out then.
They're all,
wow.
Commercially, they've all sold out.
So this is even more of a prized possession than it already was. It got a signature in here,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. And it's personalized, so I guess.
That's
can't
right.
Just steal it from you.
Oh, no, I'm not taking no. Not getting rid
of
this.
I gave it back to you.
It's true. You did already have a chance to steal it.
I did not know that there was not a huge supply.
Right.
So
History Museum's out. Lewis and Clark. What?
History Museum they might have some down there.
Okay.
Yeah. The History Museum and
did the Interpretive Center have some for a while?
They did, but they don't have anything now.
So that brings up a topic, because the back bar that is in the History Museum and the Ozark Club is really pretty. Have you seen it? Yeah.
That little bar.
Yeah.
That little serving bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks old. It's got stained glass in it. Looks pretty.
Yeah, it is. It's a nice place. It's a nice... there's another story on how we got a hold of that.
Oh.
But it was loaned to us. Because it like other things down there, it was loaned to us for use, but then they never wanted it back. But they wanted to sell it to you.
Yeah.
So we finally, I don't know how the final acquisition came about, but there was talk about that very thing, putting a big back bar in there, because there is one.
Upstairs.
I don't know if it's still there or not, but there was an old one. It was in terrible shape. It was out there at the museum down between here and Belt down at
the Memke Museum.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They had one in the building there. And I actually took pictures of it, but, it would have taken more than it would have to buy a new one to fix it.
Mm.
It was in sad shape. Mm. But they were talking about, maybe we get that one and put it in here.
No.
Mm-mm. No.
No.
So no more books at this point.
I keep getting that question, and I keep asking myself. But you know, when I put this together, it was not cheap.
Yeah.
And I told them down there, Far Country Press, I said, I want to break even on this at all.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for to make a pile on
sure.
it. I want to break even. Well, I broke an even.
Okay.
Plus a little. And
cover
and
a
I
ditch.
Keep getting, are you going to do a second edition of this? Are you going to do that? Well, I keep scratching my head.
Yeah.
Maybe yeah. not.
I always said that writing this book was a little bit like playing a slot machine. And when you put the quarter in and you pull a handle and you make a jackpot, you don't put it all back in.
Yeah.
So,
no, not if you're smart.
And
yeah.
The funny part of it was they agreed with me.
Okay. So hurry next time you're in town to the History Museum, get your copy. Mm-hmm. And then what a perfect way to spend your summer vacation, mm-hmm. just traveling through Montana, experiencing all these back bars. And
you can tell
drinking a ditch.
You can say you can start in here in the Great Falls. Yeah, and right. then use this as a travel guide.
Yeah. That's what I was just, I mean, there's what, the pie trail?
Yeah.
We wanted burger trail.
The back bar trail.
I like it. I was brainstorming about that earlier while we were talking. I was like, we can add these stops on some type of bar itinerary for Great Falls.
Well, and you get your little back bar passport, and then you get a stamp at each location, and then at the end you get a prize or
your very own back bar. How cool would that be?
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Or maybe you get your name etched in one of them.
Why don't you do it for every bar in town?
We can get that of drinking. We can get that done.
These bars, they all got a history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every one of them.
No, that gives me an idea.
See,
Next book.
I don't have to leave town.
That's right. You don't have to travel a bunch. You just tell the stories of the ones here.
Yeah.
The history of them. You can do a case study on how many of them know how to make a ditch or know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, folks, I don't know of a better summer plan than this, honestly. Right. And thanks to Paul's work of traveling our fine, fine state and finding all these beautiful back bars, they are gorgeous. And they are definitely, I mean, the first thing you're going to notice when you walk into a bar in any small town in Montana is everyone's going to turn around and look at you because they want to know if you're from there or not.
And the real small towns. Great Falls, that's not really going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen in Great Falls, but the small, small towns. And then the second thing you'll notice is these big, ornate back bars, if they have them.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few of them throughout the state. We have three in our city, two that you can drink at. You could probably drink at the Russell, but
you just
got to
avoid
the
security cameras.
Yep. Yeah, they're pretty stealthy over there. Yeah. So best of luck. So make that your summer itinerary.
Yeah.
And if you get the book and you get through all the bars, come on our podcast. Tell us about your experience.
Yeah, tell us
We'd
about
love to have that.
What you noticed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you need help planning, you can call Shannon. She's got her own book. I'm going to head to the History Museum and get my own book.
Yes. Yeah. You can look at mine from afar.
No, she may not even let you look at it. She'll just tell you the details. So make your trip to Great Falls. See the beautiful back bars here and throughout central Montana, and then expand out if you've got the time. We'd love to have you here exploring and experiencing. And we so grateful that you came on our podcast to share what you know about back bars. And in wrapping this up, where exactly is the Smokehouse Bar in Malta? What is it today?
It was in the the Smokehouse, but it was it burned down.
Okay,
I was going to say, have you not been there then?
No,
okay.
Like a lot of other things. Do you remember where the Stockman Bar was on the corner?
Yep.
Well, it was right behind the Stockman Bar, a couple of buildings down.
Okay. Yeah, I've never drank there. Oh, it'd be weird. It would be weird today to drink where the Smokehouse was.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Okay.
It was well before your time.
I just figured you knew what it was because that's your neck of the woods.
No. Nope.
Okay.
I know like 90s history and newer. Beyond.
Okay.
But nothing really back. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Well, this has been fun.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed it.
Well, good. We didn't scare him off.
He didn't run away.
No.
It's always the goal.
And folks, until we see your bright, smiling, happy, healthy face in our fine, fine city, we hope you're creating amazing memories with your friends and family wherever you might be. See you soon.
We are no damn experts, as the recorded claims from Great Falls, Montana, covering what you need to know about this amazing damn town.